attending to our hearing of God's word. Well, thank you for inviting me to be part of your worship this morning. This is really the favorite part of my work for the conference, getting out and being in worship with our churches. A man went to the doctor for his annual physical exam, and when the exam was completed, the doctor asked, "Is there anything else you'd like to discuss?" And the man thought for a moment and said, "Yes, doc, as a matter of fact, there is. My wife has gotten so hard of hearing, and yet she won't do anything about it. What can I do?" The doctor thought for a bit and said, "Well, let's try this experiment. When you go home, I want you to say something to your wife when she's not looking at you from some distance away, and keep moving closer until you get a response, and then get back to me and let me know how close you had to be." So he went home and was on the far side of their living room, his wife in the kitchen chopping vegetables at the kitchen counter, and he said, "Honey, what's for dinner?" And there was no reply, and so he went to the near side of the living room and repeated his query, "Honey, what's for dinner?" Still nothing. He moved into the kitchen, now just 8 or 9 feet away, and repeated, "Honey, what's for dinner?" Nothing. He now stands directly behind her, practically talking into her ear, and he says, "Honey, what's for dinner?" His wife spun around, chef knife in hand, pointed it at his nose, and said, "For the fourth time, beef stew." Now, yeah. Sometimes people suggest that God no longer speaks to us, that we're on our own. And yet, our denomination, United Church of Christ, proudly proclaims that God is still speaking. And I think that's right. Rather than the idea that God no longer speaks to us, I think it is much more likely that we no longer hear very well. Or perhaps we've just forgotten how to listen. We've gotten so wrapped up in doing church that I think we've forgotten how to be church. We're so stuck in our past, we haven't even thought about embracing our future. How do we explain the many things that have changed in the last 50 years? Everything has changed. Our culture has seen massive shifts. Where once we could be described as a Judeo-Christian nation, that's no longer so. Where once going to church was the convention, now it's unusual. The way which we communicate has changed drastically. Cell phones, emails, blogs, Skype, video conference calls, websites, the internet. When's the last time you saw a phone booth? If you've been stranded on a desert island for the last 50 years and came back to town this week, you would think nobody calls home anymore. How can they? There's no phone booths. But we know what's really changed is not whether we communicate, but the way in which we do it. Our cars in the parking lot have more powerful computers than the Apollo 11 capsule that went to the moon. And here we are, in this lovely little enclave against progress called church, where we do almost everything exactly like we did 50 years ago. We worship at about the same time, in the same place, in the same way as we did then. We may have new hymnals or played with the order of worship a bit over the years, but what we do this morning is essentially unchanged from any other UCC church in Vermont in 1960. And many of our churches find themselves a fraction of the size they once were, with real concerns about their viability and future and finances. And even if we're a church that's stable or growing, oftentimes it is getting older. Did we think that we were immune from change? Or did we simply stop listening? What our churches, even the vital and alive and growing ones, are struggling with is a sense of identity and purpose in the 21st century. A sense of purpose beyond themselves, a vision for mission and ministry, how to be vital, how to stop doing church and start being the church. It sounds simple, except we've spent 2,000 years building what was a movement into an institution. Institutions are by nature defenders of the status quo. They have a system and processes and direction, very complicated and long constitutions and bylaws, and changing those from within is very hard. Movements, on the other hand, aren't burdened by history or tradition. They are trying a new thing, a new way. They are unfettered, trying to upset the status quo. Movements can be a force for change. Institutions exist to sustain themselves. Occupy Wall Street, movement. Wall Street, institution. Black Lives Matter, a movement. White privilege, institution. Movements usually have three outcomes. They may wither and die, unable to sustain their momentum. They can become accepted and eventually become an institution themselves, or they can cause significant change within an existing institution. Well, what does all that mean to us? Well, I think it only takes a cursory look at the history of the United Church of Christ and its predecessor denominations to see how movements for change, abolitionists, civil rights, LGBTQ rights, ordination of women, and so much more, eventually became part of who we are as a denomination. A movement from within us changed us. You might carry that a step further and see how we as a denomination could be seen as a movement to society at large, eventually affecting change in a much broader sense. Now, I'm not saying that the UCC gets the credit for all social justice gains ever, but we do have a history of being on the leading edge of that change, which is where the movements are. That part is exciting and affirming. Here's the not so affirming part. Our churches, associations, and your conference are, you guessed it, institutions. That's why change is so hard. We're not built to be nimble, but to defend and protect and continue what we are with what we have. A review of mainline Protestantism in the second half of the 20th century makes this all too clear. As our culture changed and swirled around us, we became more steadfast, more resolute, more insular, hoping that the latest church growth program would solve all of our ills and attract young people with families. We know now that each successive program was designed to try to bend the culture back to us rather than the other way around. And that's why none of them ever worked. We need to rediscover the way of Jesus, which was the way of a movement, seeking to be the church rather than just doing church. We're called to worship God, not our buildings, not our structure, not even our history. It could mean a little less focus on meetings and governance and meetings and protecting an endowment and not offending the choir and meetings and, come on, you got to smile at some of that. In many of our churches, there exists what Robert Chenez calls a shadow mission. Those things that drive our behaviors or limit our alternatives more than our stated mission and proclaimed values. Our shadow mission, which screams of institution. So we wait and we wonder and try not to be lulled to sleep following the same old routine with her eyes glazed over. Habakkuk tells us, this vision message is a witness pointing to what's coming. It aches for the coming, and can hardly wait, and it doesn't lie. If it seems slow in coming, wait, because it's on its way, and it will come right on time. And I'm pretty sure right on time means now. Isaiah also speaks to us. Hear these words again. Forget the old things, the former things. Do not dwell in your past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. Speaking of wasteland, church in the first part of the 21st century has much in common with the people of Israel wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. They know they weren't slaves anymore. They knew they weren't in bondage anymore. They know they didn't live in Egypt anymore. They knew there was a promised land out there for them somewhere, but that was about it. Where it was, what it looked like, how they would get there, or even when they would arrive, was all a mystery. So how do we as church, as Christians, as disciples of Jesus, find our path to the future and learn to embrace it? How do we learn to be vital? Well, our culture has changed, but we have not. And I should say it's not just the United Church of Christ. All the mainline denominations have been in decline since the 1970s. In the past decade, our brothers and sisters in the evangelical and fundamental churches have joined us. They peaked later, so their decline began later, but it's a parallel line. Moreover, if you're a member of the Grange or 4-H or your local Masonic Lodge or Rotary or virtually any other nonprofit community group, you're having these same kinds of discussions there. When I meet with a church about vitality or membership or uncertain future, I am invariably asked, where are all the young people? Where are the families with children? Wouldn't everything be all right if they just came back? Perhaps. But statistics tell us that if you exclude Christmas and Easter, 70% of all 18-year-olds have never been in a church. 70%. They can't come back. They've never been. They have no idea what goes on in here on an average Sunday morning. In fact, on the rare occasion when they do wander in, they sometimes leave confused and upset. What we do is hard to understand if you are unchurched. We stand, we sit, we sing songs that sometimes have archaic words that are difficult to understand. We mumble prayers, the words of which aren't always printed for visitors to understand. They hear what looks like a college lecture from a college lectern, or worse, a judge's bench. And sometimes we wear robes just so that we look more like someone official. It's not hospitable to someone who's never been. Mike Piazza tells us we should strive for 52 transformational experiences every year, every Sunday. In addition to worship that touches them, millennials care much more about what you do as a community of faith than what you have. Unlike the greatest generation with built-up community nonprofits after World War II, millennials in particular have no love for institutions per se, but they do crave a sense of community and mission in ministry that makes a difference in the lives of those touched. Forgive me, but a millennial might ask, how many people could have been fed with the hundreds of thousands of dollars spent to fix a steeple? The same millennial who would run away from a 3-year term as a deacon might participate in a Habitat work day or volunteer for a work party to rebuild an elderly neighbor's porch. They care much less about what you come out of and much more about what you do when you come out. Moreover, we've taught 2 generations of kids not to trust authority. I was born in 1960, and I have this vivid memory of being 8 or 9 years old and sitting in the kitchen with my parents, eating our evening dinner, watching Walter Cronkite on the news in the black and white portable with the rabbit ears. And at every night during that newscast, at some point, a number would appear over his shoulder. That number was the number of men and women killed the day before in Vietnam. Sometimes it was a single digit, sometimes it was 3 digits, but every night. We followed that with Watergate. We followed that with Iran-Contra. And we followed that with Bill Clinton's impeachment. And you can sort of fill in the blanks after that. Guess what our tall steeples look like to them? Tall, towering positions of authority in the midst of our communities, trying to be the biggest and tallest thing. They looked the same to unchurched people under 40 as a courthouse or the state house. Is it no wonder they subconsciously avoid coming through our doors? We've taught them not to trust us. And certain televangelists haven't helped either. To many 20 or 30 somethings, all they know about Christianity is what they found on cable TV. The world has changed, and we've gotten a bit behind, but despite all that sort of bad-sounding news, we have many churches in the Vermont Conference who have begun to grow again. We're showing signs of being ready to get back at it. Isaiah says, I am about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? Here's the irony. The new thing is a really old thing. It's actually the original thing. We have to rediscover the way of Jesus' movement, not the religious establishment which formed in his wake that we have been solidifying as an institution ever since. All across Vermont and well beyond, churches are learning a new way to be church, a new way to be vital, a return of focus on our communities and their needs rather than existing to serve ourselves in our buildings. The conference churches that are thriving and growing are those who have identified the greatest needs in their community and matched one or more of those needs to the thing the congregation has a passion about enough to make a difference. And then partnering with other groups within the community to do that work. And then watching as that community capital reach benefits in both participation and financial support of the congregation. I know that this congregation has an impressive list of mission partners, from the Lund Center to JUMP to Habitat to the Food Shelf to working in refugee resettlement, and it's all very good. But the question is, what's your passion? And if I go to talk to someone on the street and I say, hey, the Charlotte Congregational Church, they're the church that... How would they fill in that blank? We do many good works, but oftentimes it's only known to ourselves, and that's a hard way to invite new people in. We're going to be talking about this sort of stuff after worship. I hope that you'll be able to stay. It's just snow. It's an exciting time. For the first time in decades, during 2 of the last 3 years, the number of active members of UCC churches in Vermont actually grew. It's time. We're perceiving a new thing. It's already taken root in some of our churches. We're discovering how to honor who we are and where we've been while making space for and preparing for and, most importantly, being open to the movement of the Spirit, listening for what comes next. It's time. It's time to be unshackled from our institutions and begin acting like a movement again. It's time to embrace our future. Let's get started. Amen.
Please join me.